In today's episode, we'll continue the Ramayana with another battle between Lakshman and Indrajit after Indrajit's dirty trick of bringing Sita onto the battlefield. Welcome to Stories from India. This is a podcast that will take you on a journey through the rich mythology, folklore, and history of the Indian subcontinent. I am Narad Muni, the celestial storyteller and the original Time Lord. With my ability to travel through space and time, I can bring you fascinating stories from the past, the present, and the future. From the epic tales of the Mahabharata and Ramayana to the folk tales of the Panchatantra, to stories of Akbar Birbal and Tenali Raman, I have a story for every occasion. The purpose of the stories is neither to pass judgment nor to indoctrinate. My goal is only to share these stories with people who may not have heard them before, and to make them more entertaining for those who have. Ram Navami is coming up in a few days. It's a special occasion marking the birth of Ram. While today's episode doesn't feature Ram prominently, you could easily say that the entire saga is about Ram. So it's definitely not off-topic for us to be covering a Ramayana episode ahead of Ram Navami. But before we jump in, a bit of background in case you haven't heard previous Ramayana episodes. The Ramayana, together with the Mahabharata, is one of two major epics in Indian mythology. The saga began in the kingdom of Ayodhya, with Ram as the crown prince. Ram was an avatar of Vishnu, who is the preserver of the universe. He is part of the Holy Trinity, together with Shiva, the destroyer, and Brahma, the creator. But right when Ram was on the cusp of becoming king, his stepmother threw a spanner in the works and forced him into exile for 14 years. Ram went into the forest, accompanied by his wife Sita and brother Lakshman. Ram, Lakshman, and Sita overcame several challenges in the wild. Demons and demonesses that were constantly trying to eat, enslave, or kill them. Or perhaps all of the above. Ram and Lakshman dispatched all those dangers easily enough. Until Sita was abducted by Ravan, the ten-headed demon king of Lanka. Ravan was absolutely the mega-villain in this epic. This ultimate boss-level character was full of so many superpowers that defeating him was virtually impossible. The pop culture analogy is a mashup of Lord Voldemort, Darth Vader, Scar, Jafar, Maleficent, and any other villain you can think of. Add up all their villainy and superpowers, subtract any weaknesses, and multiply it all by 10, because Ravan had 10 heads. In the absence of any police force, CBI, or the Gumshuda Talash Kendra, Ram and Lakshman got help from the next best option, the Vanars. These Vanars were a kingdom of monkeys led by their king Sugriv. Hanuman, who was Sugriv's advisor and right-hand Vanar, provided most of that actual help. He found Sita across the ocean in Lanka. He delivered Ram's words of support to his wife and delivered her message back to Ram. And because he was so powerful, he also burned down most of Lanka in the process. Ravan's brother, Vibhishan, switched sides and teamed up with Ram. And not just because his home had burned down. He genuinely felt that Ravan was wrong not to return Sita. Ram, Lakshman, and all the Vanars crossed the ocean to get to Lanka. To do this, they first had to build a bridge, which any civil engineer will tell you is an incredibly hard job in the 21st century. Never mind all those millennia ago. And then, the war began. The Vanars and the Lankans fought tooth and nail. Ravan's son Indrajit had achieved what he thought was victory, when he very badly hurt both Ram and Lakshman. Luckily for the Ayodhya brothers, Garud, the king of birds, saved them. The tide turned against the Lankans after that. Ravan entered battle himself and tried to make a splash, but ended up having his nose rubbed into the ground. Actually, all 10 noses. One Lankan general after another fell, and that included Ravan's mountain-sized brother, Kumbhakarna. Only Indrajit and Ravan remained. But Indrajit seemed to have capped a major win by killing Lakshman. Or so he thought. Lakshman was hurt very badly, and he only managed to survive thanks to Hanuman's speedy run to the Himalayas for some medicinal herbs. We are continuing our story early in the morning in Ravan's palace, in Indrajit's wing. Indrajit did not wake up in a cold sweat, the way he had done for so many nights now. Indrajit himself was amazed by this. He turned to his wife. She was the daughter of a nag, or a snake, so there were many serpentine aspects to her.
"Killing Lakshman was exactly the relief I needed. This was the best sleep I had. And I don't even know when I got drowsy and dropped off. I didn't even have to count sheep," he exclaimed.
"Can you please not mention sheep?" his wife retorted. "I'm still trying to digest the 3 that I had for dinner last week. I think one of them even had horns. Now go, and don't bother me for another 3 weeks at least." Indrajit grumbled and stepped out.
So, his wife wasn't appreciating him for killing Lakshman and overcoming his sleep demons. He was going to teach her. Today, he decided he was going to kill Ram. That was guaranteed to make her sit up and take notice.
But something that he saw on the battlefield made him sit up and take notice. When Indrajit got there, he quickly punched in his card by the time clock and got to his preferred spot, behind the Lankan starting line. The Lankans and the Vanars were each behind their lines, patiently waiting for the umpire to blow the starting whistle. Indrajit took this time to survey the enemy across no man's land. And before you ask, it was no man's land because no man dared to go there. Women were totally welcome. But they were clearing that space as well, as the umpire checked his clock again and got ready with the whistle. That's when Indrajit saw Lakshman.
"No! No way! This couldn't be Lakshman now, could it?
Whom had Indrajit actually killed yesterday then?
Was it a body double?" "Hey, you! Do you have a twin brother?"
Indrajit called out across that gap. "You're right, I do," Lakshman called back, answering the letter of the question rather than the spirit. After all, his twin brother, Shatrughna, was back in Ayodhya. Remarkably perceptive of Indrajit to have detected that. Lakshman wondered how he had known. Indrajit was flummoxed. Maybe they had an intelligence failure, and there had been 3 Ayodhya brothers, not 2. But it didn't matter. He took care of 1 yesterday. He would take care of this one today.
"In a couple of minutes, I'm going to send you to join him," he snapped menacingly. Again, Lakshman was puzzled. What arrow was Indrajit planning on using that would dispatch Lakshman all the way back to Ayodhya? Maybe a Mark 34 teleportation special? But those were really hard to come by. Even Lakshman didn't have one of those in his arsenal. Well, if that's what Indrajit was planning to use, Lakshman decided to use a dark energy arrow. That would neutralize any local space-time manipulation. As soon as the umpire blew his whistle, Indrajit and Lakshman let loose their arrows. Indrajit's arrow hadn't been a particularly powerful one, so he was surprised that his opponent had used a dark energy arrow. When the two arrows clashed, there was a cloud that emerged, and that made it murky to see through, as you might expect with dark energy. But that meant Indrajit and Lakshman couldn't see each other through the dark energy cloud. Lakshman decided to go left around the cloud, hoping that Indrajit would do the same.
"Go around to the right," Indrajit instructed his chariot driver.
Of course they missed each other. But there were plenty of Vanars and Lankans for each warrior to deal with. Lakshman dispatched his batch and started making his way towards where Indrajit might have gone. Indrajit, meanwhile, had drifted in the general direction where Ram, Hanuman, Jambavan, and a few others were fighting their own literal demons. Indrajit waited until Hanuman, Jambavan, and a few other Vanar generals noticed his presence. That was necessary for the next act. He needed their attention.
"Hey, monkeys, look here," he shouted.
Despite their anger at being addressed rudely, the Vanars looked at him. Indrajit smiled to himself, and then at them. Now to pull the ace out of his sleeve. And with that, he pulled Sita by her hair out of a corner of his chariot and held a sword against her neck.
"This is the lady you came to rescue. Look, here she is, at my mercy."
Every Vanar around was stunned into silence.
"Who's laughing now, Vanars? You monkeys burned down my city. You destroyed so much of our army. You killed my uncles. Now let's see how you react to this."
And with that remark, and one swift blow, he sliced off Sita's head. Every Vanar around howled in pain, as if it was their own head that had been cut off. Hanuman and a few others ran back to alert Ram. He found Ram, Lakshman and Vibhishan. Quickly he pulled them aside and told them what Indrajit had done. Ram was distraught. Sita gone. He couldn't take it. Lakshman was also deeply emotionally affected. Vibhishan laughed.
You're a traitor. You're still on Ravan's side," Lakshman accused him. "Gosh, no," Vibhishan exclaimed. "I'm like totally on your side, dude. I was merely laughing because you've become Bakras."
"What?" asked three shocked voices all at once. So Vibhishan explained that this was merely a party trick. One of those that Indrajit was frequently playing. He could create a kind of a hologram of someone. It was a little bit like Maya, but not exactly. He started doing it back when he was a child, during birthday parties. He found it fun to make a dog or a horse and to make it do funny tricks for the audience. Later in life, he started creating fake princesses for his father to practice abducting. Lakshman still wasn't happy.
You monster, you encouraged him?
Vibhishan pointed out that it was either that or abducting real princesses. What did they expect? Anyway, he began telling them about this one time at their annual Puppet Theatre Award ceremony, where Indrajit created this illusion of puppets that flew without strings. It was marvelous. Ram thanked Vibhishan and said he'd love to hear about their annual Puppet Theatre Awards, but maybe another time. Right now, he would like Lakshman to go and take care of the Indrajit menace once and for all. Lakshman, too, wanted to take care of the Indrajit menace once and for all.
Vibhishan spoke up.
Lakshman, whatever happens, don't let him complete his special yajna, or rite, to summon an invincible chariot. Once he's on the chariot, no one can harm him. Not even the prophesied Sleepless in Sri Lanka man.
That piqued everyone's curiosity. So Vibhishan explained that Brahma, the creator of the universe, had granted Indrajit the power to summon the invincibility chariot under one condition. That Indrajit could only be killed by someone who disrupted the yajna, provided that person hadn't slept at all in 12 years. Within the family, they had taken to calling this mysterious chap Sleepless in Sri Lanka.
Funny you should say that, Lakshman said, turning around to face Vibhishan.
And then, for the first time, Vibhishan realized something that he hadn't noticed before. Lakshman's eyes were underlined, not by war paint, as he had previously thought. There were dark circles, so many that Vibhishan didn't want to hazard a guess now, but they seemed precisely equivalent to 4,383 nights of no sleep, which was exactly 12 years. It's awkward that until now there was no reference to Lakshman's lack of sleep. Maybe I should have mentioned it before. I'm sorry, but it's easy to lose track of little bits of info here and there when you have all the knowledge of the universe in your head. Anyway, let's just gloss over that part and continue on with the story. After killing the fake Sita, Indrajit quickly reached the site for his yajna. While the enemy was distracted, he could complete his yajna and get the invincibility chariot. And that seemed to Indrajit to be the best way to defeat Ram and Lakshman and Hanuman and Sugriv and all those Vanars. It was a good plan. And it might have worked if Lakshman hadn't shown up and fired the extinguisher, a firefighter's special edition arrow. It landed right on the fire in Indrajit's yajna and put it out. Indrajit was annoyed now, but he figured it was his own fault for letting this insolent Ayodhya brother live on. He fired the exponential, a single arrow that multiplied into several, which multiplied into several more. But Lakshman responded with an exponential of his own. Indrajit fired another arrow called the bomb. But he hadn't read the label correctly. It was actually a flower bomb, an arrow that spread perfume, rather than doing any actual harm. Lakshman used that opportunity to send a thank you arrow, an arrow that dropped a thank you note into Indrajit's hands, which only further infuriated Indrajit. He let fly the juggernaut, a powerful arrow with the strength of 1,000 elephants. Lakshman merely stepped out of the way. The arrow went on harmlessly and probably fell into the ocean somewhere. Now, Lakshman launched an arrow. It was an arrow shaped like a lightning bolt. That alone may tell you that it was a gift from Indra, the ruler of Swarg and the god of rain, thunder, and lightning. But Lakshman did one more thing right before launching the arrow. He invoked Ram's name and prayed that the arrow would finish this demon once and for all. Indrajit quickly sent forth a magnetic arrow. His reasoning was that an arrow shaped like a lightning bolt was governed by electricity, and magnetic fields could distort electricity. Well, he wasn't wrong, but where he failed was to assume that this was a closed system. The magnetic arrow didn't go very far. In fact, it got attracted to his own metal armor. It did a U-turn and softly landed on his own chest plate. But Lakshman's arrow found its mark. It severed Indrajit's head cleanly at the neck. You could tell the immense sense of relief everyone felt on the battlefield. The Vanars expressed it openly. The Lankans couldn't. Most Lankans thought that Indrajit was a horrible boss. But they couldn't celebrate in front of the enemy, could they? From Swarg, or heaven, there were flowers that came raining down. A special treat from Indra to go with Indrajit's earlier misfired flower bomb. So that was it. Now that Indrajit had fallen, there wasn't much left. Ravan and maybe a few Lankans here and there. Victory was in sight. Of course, there was still the danger that Ravan could threaten harm to Sita and use that as leverage to bring the enemy to their knees. But we'll have to wait a while to see if Ravan resorts to that. Previous Ramayana episodes are linked in the show notes and on the site sfipodcast.com. Check them out. In the next episode, we are dipping into history, specifically into India's independence struggle and the important role of one woman whose thinking was far ahead of her time, Aruna Asaf Ali. Thank you all for the comments on social media and on Spotify's Q&A. I can't directly reply to the questions there, but I'll address them here on this show. Thank you, Kyra. Your support is so heartwarming. I'm really, really glad that you're enjoying this podcast. Agree with your comment on the Dhobi. Poor chap, he got the worst of it after his encounter with Tenali Raman. And I know I do repeat quite often that Brahma is my dad. I just can't help it. I have to show off a bit. It also combats some skepticism from those who don't actually believe that I really am Narad Muni. And yes, I do have an email ID. I used to do the postal mail thing, written on leaves and barks, going back several millennia. But I got with the digital age. Madhu, glad you liked Vikram and Betal. I do have another story coming up on that front. Aniv, same goes for you. Abir, a time traveler, always finds it tough to answer where they live. I can be anywhere and in multiple places all at once, so I'm not really sure how to answer your question. Remind me, not sure what you mean by an Avengers story. If you're looking for analogies, there are several MCU and other pop culture references in too many of these episodes, including the very first one, Episode 0, Rockstar. And I know you asked for 100 more episodes. I'm working towards it. One episode a week. Shalu, thank you as always for your thoughtful and sincere comments. I'm glad you're enjoying these episodes, and it's support like this which motivates me to continue telling more stories. Aina, I'm glad you enjoyed the Chandrakanta story. We'll get back to the series as soon as I clear some of the backlog on other categories. If you have any other comments or suggestions, or if there are particular stories you'd like to hear, please do let me know by leaving a comment or a review on the site, sfipodcast.com, or reply to the questions on Spotify's Q&A. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook. You can listen to the show on all podcast apps, and that now includes YouTube. If you want to send me an email, it's storiesfromindiapodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get notified automatically of new episodes. A big thank you to each and every one of you for your continued support and your feedback. The music is from purpleplanet.com. That's purple-planet.com. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.